Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a very, very young, successful entrepreneur from New Delhi, India, Mr. Vishesh Khurana. Vishesh, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh, for inviting me.
Thank you. Vishesh is the co-founder growth of ShipRocket, which he, as he just mentioned, is just short of a unicorn status because they chose to keep it like that. He's a serial entrepreneur, and in his own words, he's an e-commerce geek. So Vishesh, let's talk about ShipRocket. I mean, I've been reading about the organization, about the amazing things you're doing. Tell me about this venture and your motivation to start it.
So, very, very quick background about ShipRocket. So, ShipRocket is a post-checkout experience company. So, what we do is we offer tools and technologies required for everything that happens post-checkout of an order. So, starting with warehousing, packaging, selection of a courier partner, shipping, tracking management, and end consumer communication, and on ending with the return management. So, everything that Amazon offers as an Amazon Prime experience, we're trying to enable all the D2C brands offer the same level of experience by putting together all that infrastructure together. And I think the motivation to start is all about our customers, right? So this is the third product by the same company. We started back in 2012. We started as a shopping cart and onboarded help e-commerce SMEs to start an e-commerce website. As we grew, we learned about their problems or what were their problems when they had a website. So there was conversion, demand, and then there was shipping. So then we started launching products to solve those problems. So we launched a marketplace to solve demand, and we launched a marketplace for logistics to solve shipping. And everything that happens in our journey as a company, all the product roadmap that comes out from product requirements by our customers. So we actively listen to them, their current problems and what are you facing, and try and come back with solutions using technology, what we can offer to help them resolve those issues. So that's how ShipRocket also came to life. It was completely by the needs and demands of our customers.
Fascinating. And you know, you just mentioned that from 2012, you started as an e-commerce platform. And then tell me, what have been some of the times that you've had to pivot your business? Because today it's a completely different business. And what went into taking a decision to pivot? That's a difficult one for entrepreneurs.
So, yes, it was a difficult one, right? So we started as a shopping cart and we scaled that business to a certain extent. Very soon we realized that while building website is easy, holding onto that website or an online business is very difficult in India because people do not get demand. They don't know how to get demand. They don't know a lot about digital marketing. So awareness was limited. Then we moved on to a different version of the business to solve that problem. That was a marketplace called Craftly. But very soon we realized that it's the e-commerce business in India is just not unit economics effective, right?
Correct.
And it is, I think, very, very personal as an entrepreneur and as individuals to us that we choose not to enter businesses that you know, involve high burns. It's not right or wrong. It's a personal choice as an entrepreneur. It's personality, I think. And we wanted to stick to businesses that can be at least justifiably unit economics, right? There has to be something around it. And ShipRocket was our third product, which was showing those signs in terms of very, very decent economics, very, very high growth. And it was actually solving a very, very real problem. And it was a call that I think individually you take that if something is working, you put all your efforts behind that.
Correct.
And ShipRocket found its product market fit and we decided to focus upon it and scale it.
How fascinating. And you know, when you were telling me about the work that ShipRocket is doing, it took me back to my days as an entrepreneur at Guardian. And one of the biggest problems we used to have was returns. Returns, not just from customers, but in the pharmacy world or pharmaceutical world, even the medicines that are near close to expiry are returned to the warehouse. And someone was telling me that the total returns in the world are in excess of about $200 billion a year. Before I get into more details of ShipRocket, tell me a little more about returns and how are you tackling this?
So Luckily for us, I think a very, very large portion of our business, of the merchants we deal with, are personal care and other products that do not allow returns. But for the ones they do, I think what we have is a very, very decent solution when it it's called a quality check returns, right? So a large problem about returns is non-salability of product. So you get products back that are not saleable anymore. And that comes up back as a decent loss because now you're paying for logistics for a product that is not even saleable.
Correct.
So, you know, then you put in a small layer of quality checks on the spot. So now there are providers, courier partners who can offer services that can do some, you know, checklist of items where when they are picking the product. So at least ensure the product that they are picking is now resaleable at least. And then also the other thing that you can do is not taking the product back all the way to the mother warehouse. You can, if you can put, we already have a network of warehouses that the service we offer. To reduce the cost of shipping on return, you bring it back to the nearest warehouse where it can be replenished, repacked, and ready to be resold. So few things I think are helping them manage the returns as a problem. But overall, I think the problem is not as large in the categories we deal in.
Okay. That's very interesting to know. I mean, I wish you had existed when I was running Guardian or when I had founded Guardian. I would say 90% of my returns problems would have been solved. But Vishesh, moving on, you are a very key element of a supply chain. I'd love to get your perspective on how the supply chain has evolved over the years.
So I think the supply chain has evolved keeping one central focal point. It's all about speed. As every few months passing, everything that we are optimizing is for how soon can we reach. Correct. And now we are at 10 minutes.
Correct.
I don't know how where we can go from this, but we are now actually super fast, I think.
Right.
So it's all about massive distribution, widespread of distribution, widespread of warehouses. It's now no more the outskirts of 2 lakh square feet. It's 1,000 square feet, but thousands of warehouses within the city. So I think it's evolving in a very, very fast fashion. It's all about demand planning and distribution and reducing the time, distance of order fulfillment.
Amazing.
The challenges are very, very large on this solution, but I think it's just unbelievable how we are executing at the speeds of 6-7 minutes from order to delivery to your house.
Amazing.
A lot has changed, I think, over the last less than 18-20 months.
Absolutely right. You know, and as a consumer, I experienced that. But Vishesh, tell me, how is technology changing logistics?
So I think a lot of this is now, it's no more about on-ground operations. I think it's all the decisions that you make off the ground before the order is even picked, even to the extent of before you have even thought about ordering it. So now the technology is even going into predicting that you will order tomorrow. A lot of efforts is now going before on the back end of the order journey. Starting with which product should I store where is a very, very big. So demand planning, if you can get that right, you can do a lot with it. So if you can predict the demand patterns of a certain geographical pin code and store the right SKUs in that pin code, that will enable you to deliver in 10 minutes. Because when you are dealing with 1,000, 2,000 square feet warehouses, it's just not possible to have a large breadth of inventory.
So my next question to you, Vishesh, is that when you talk of logistics, do you see drones, etc., coming in a big way?
I see them, yes. I think we are a little bit far from it, not in the near future. I think as a country, we are still evolving to put the right drone regulations in place. But what I would like to see is if that's supposed to happen, I think the first area it should happen is to the emergency services, medical supplies and other things. But I think though they will adopt it first, we will be the ones to follow. But it's definitely a great way to execute it. But I think it's a little far from today where we are.
Interesting. The other question is that while the logistics in the large cities in urban India seem to be reaching that 10 minute and doing it quite efficiently, what is happening in the tier 2, tier 3 cities and in rural India?
So very, very interestingly, one trend that we come across as logistics aggregators or tier two, tier three cities have their own dominant players. There are experts of those particular region. So what we find is there are players who are very, very good in a particular region across 10, 20 kilometers of radius, and they do a phenomenal job. So as a supply chain expert, what you do is you, if you can aggregate them and just do the last or the mid mile till a certain point and hand it over to them, they are actually as efficient as the urban cities. Those players, they can, because the demand, the density is less, but we are not doing the 10-minute structures right now, but we will get there. But the same day things and the next day deliveries are now becoming a norm almost at 75% of India's pin code. So I think it's already happening.
Okay. And the, you know, we've all, or we are still in the pandemic phase, working from home largely. Offices have started opening up. Well, on the one side, there's been a huge boom for the e-commerce platforms and organizations like yours, which are fulfilling. How have customer expectations changed in terms of, you know, expectations from you as a delivery partner and from the e-commerce platform?
I think it's more to do with trust. One, there was a behavioral shift that is now not just temporary, it's now permanent. While pandemic was a way to force them to do so, now it's become a way of life where people have realized that it is actually effective and convenient as well as cheap. So they are now expecting their orders. Of course, trust becomes a very, very big aspect of this now play. As logistics provider, they want to trust the provider to make sure that what they have ordered. The biggest problem in D2C as a widespread website is trust. If I'm ordering from a website that I've never heard about, will it come? Will the same product come? Is my money safe? If I don't like it, can I return it? Or I'm stuck with the product? I think the expectations around those is now also somewhat expected from the provider as well. That if the provider is delivering something from a certain vendor, the provider should also assume responsibility to ensure that if I do not like the product or I am being cheated or defrauded, the provider should interfere or at least do some mediation in that process. So yeah, I think we are also working to a lot in that direction to build that trust amongst both parties. And we are trying to become that trust layer, saying that if it is coming from ShipRocket, we will ensure that you are secured. We will ensure, we will coordinate with your seller. And on the seller's end, we ensure that we do the right KYCs and other processes required to ensure that they cannot fraud anyone. And if they do, we can at least go back and see who they are.
So then, Vishesh, a question for you is that if you're doing all these quality control checks, etc., from a customer perspective, where does accountability lie if the product is not as per specifications?
The accountability still lies with the seller. I think what is needed is if I, as a buyer, am trying to reach a seller and he's not responding to me, we can be the second layer where they can at least ask us to mediate. And then because we, as a vendor, have a little bit more control, we can reach out to the seller. We will ensure they listen to us. And it's just a process of helping both parties. And from a buyer standpoint, knowing that there is a third party involved who can actually help me in, if I'm stuck, helps build that trust a little bit more. Because at the end of the day, they don't know the third party. Their money is already paid for.
You know, one of the things that I want to come back to where you said from a mega warehouse to small 1,000-square-foot warehouses, which is probably in local vendor locations. How does one ensure quality control in a multiplicity of locations?
I think the process of quality control still lies with the mother warehouses. The smaller warehouses are only a transit warehouses where the products will only stay for a couple of hours before they are moved out. So the supply chain works in a format where the entire inventories will be distributed amongst five large warehouses. From those five large warehouses, depending upon the demand planning, we will do the daily replenishment of smaller warehouses.
Okay.
So as it is a traditional process when the products are entered into the large warehouses. And as logistics providers, we are still just moving the product. The quality control for us is very, very minimal. Just ensuring that it's not broken, it's not leaking, I think is enough for us. But more than that, we are just not responsible for the rest of the quality.
Fair enough. So my next question to you is coming back to ShipRocket as an organization that you are building and have built into such an amazing company. What have been some of your challenges and some of your learnings as you have scaled up?
I think learnings are immense in terms of how e-commerce functions. What And more from an organization standpoint, I think as an entrepreneur, we have also learned a lot about people when you have a large employee base working for you. But from challenges, I think the biggest challenge in Indian e-commerce system is awareness, right? And there are other legal and compliance hurdles that as a country we all face. Simple things like if a product is not correct, people could easily file an FIR or a legal case against us, rather the end seller, because they hold us responsible for most of those things. And other than that, I think just getting through the expectation of speed and managing that supply chain of thousands of warehouses is a challenge in itself. Because in the frenzy of quick commerce and with all the players that are now in the market, even finding the right manpower and workforce is becoming a bigger challenge than we could have ever thought in a country like India, which is such a large population. But everyone's fighting for that resource and it's becoming scarce as it can get.
Amazing, amazing. And when you look at the people that you are hiring, one of the challenges I remember I faced when we were looking, and we used to do our own home delivery and our own set of people because organizations like yours did not exist. What are the processes you follow to ensure that whatever is being carried is actually delivered? I mean, for example, I used to have a challenge that if the if a delivery person in those days, salaries were low, but say the person was getting, say, 8,000 rupees, we had to ensure that the amount of order that he was carrying was less than 8,000. What kind of checks and balances are you building in for such a vast amount of inventory that is being carried all over the country by individuals?
So I think luckily for an organization like us, we are just a layer of aggregation on top of them. Right. This problem lies with the end field owner, fleet owner, like Delivery, Blue Dart, and Ecom Express, all the courier companies. ShipRocket aggregates all of them. I think this particular problem, we get an insurance offered by each and every provider. So every each and every order that is moved via ShipRocket is covered up to 5,000 rupees each per order. And it's insured. And if it's more, if it is more in value of 5,000, you can buy additional insurances. So it is for us, we can claim insurance for every loss. For buyers, they can claim insurance from us. I think the real problem lies with deliveries to ensure that their fleet is now KYC'd and they are secured. I think luckily for us, that problem is still limited, not to us.
Well said. You seem to have pivoted into the right sector then, you know. Very good. So my next question to you, Vishesh, is relating to, again, what you see. I mean, as a co-founder of an organization like ShipRocket, what do you see as the future of supply chains in terms of you can't go below 5, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, even 10 minutes is a challenge. What do you see in terms of, you know, how will you fulfill customer expectations? How do you see technology changing? How do you see supply chains evolving?
See, the biggest challenge for supply chain, while the time problem is something that we are solving, I think reach, so reaching to a much larger area of this country will become one challenge. The other biggest challenge will be cost. While in the whole venture capital industry and a lot of liquidity, everyone's trying to execute one part of it. It's solve for time, forget the cost. But there will be a time when you will have to solve for cost as well. You can't continue doing that. The margins are getting thinner and thinner with increasing competition. You're dealing with categories like groceries and perishables and milk. The margins aren't there. So at some point, you can't forever subsidize this. The next biggest thing will be how do you optimize cost? Even in the 10, 20 minutes timelines, will the buyer pay for it? Will you offload the cost to the end buyer at some point? Will you do a milk run structure? Will you start doing routing? So technology will start playing a lot of role to reduce cost now. Time is something you can't go below that. You can't teleport now. So you will have to, the bare minimum time will still be there. Now it's how do you ensure the cost of that each order, which stands at about 60, 50, 80 bucks, comes down to ensure now its unit economics healthy as well.
Mm.
So a lot of technology will go in that particular process of demand planning, route optimization. How can one guy deliver more than one order than one single run? So if it, still doing within 10 minutes, it's very complicated, but I think we need to get there as well at certain stage.
Fascinating, fascinating. So my last question to you is, again, coming back to Shiprocket and this entire industry, and you just mentioned that, you know, cost of the delivery is getting is high, and therefore that's optimized. I've often wondered if I'm getting a discount on a particular e-commerce site, I buy it. If the discount stops, will I continue to go there, or will I move somewhere else? Or will they have to move to what happens on television advertising, that at 8:15 p.m. all channels will run ads? So do you see any kind of changes taking place in optimizing the supplies so that nobody loses?
So I think that was one very, very surprising learning for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
That from the value shopping of e-commerce or the discount shopping of e-commerce, the world has already moved a little ahead of that.
Mm-hmm.
People are no more looking for value, but categories, a wide spread of products. How D2C evolved in the last 18-24 months, and how we saw category, the most competitive categories where the global players dominated it. Things like baby food, things like baby care, cosmetic, with brands and mammoths like Johnson & Johnson. D2C folks entered, they made this place. They did not cut cost. They were actually selling at a higher premium pricing. But they cracked quality. They offered what India needed. They offered what people are looking for. So it's all about now matching the demands. People are not really looking for price sensitivity anymore. It's all about getting them the right product.
Amazing.
Affordability and the demand is already there. We are already in areas where people are willing to buy themselves healthcare products, gummies, vitamin gummies and stuff like that, which cost you like $600-700 a bottle. It's changed a lot, where people used to never think about supplements as an expense that they should be doing in their daily life.
Right.
But now with all the new age brands, people are actually Ayurvedic supplements. A lot is changing. It's all about innovative products now. And the entire growth is happening on the back of innovation of products.
Fascinating. Vishesh, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me at such length about Shiprocket and the amazing work you are doing. Thank you for talking to me about supply chains and how they're evolving. And thank you for talking to me about how the customer expectations are evolving. Thank you again and good luck.
No, and thank you, Ashutosh. I think it's a great initiative that you have put together. I've been listening to these podcasts, and there is one or two small learnings you get out of each one of them that you can use in your daily journey as well. So thank you for putting this together.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.